Welcome, everyone, to Paradigm Shifters. And the paradigm shifters we have today are here from, I believe, Down Under, but we're going to find out what that really means. And it's Paul and Jay Lee Balch. And they were our paradigm shifters about 3 or maybe 4 years ago. But so much is happening as you're wending your way through the changing consciousness on this planet and actually egging it along, aren't you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. And it's wonderful to be on the show with you again, Veronica.
Yeah. Has it been, 3 or 4 years? What's it been?
I think it's actually about 5 years. It's been quite a while.
Oh, wow. My goodness. And you're in my home country of Canada right now. Is it cold there?
The weather's certainly starting to shift and get a little bit cooler, and we're putting layers on, yes.
Well, you two have been living down in Australia, or have you been living? Where have you been living?
We're approximately 2 hours north of Brisbane, near Noosa, for those who know where that is.
I don't think I've ever heard of that, but I hear wonderful things about being in Australia. So instead of traveling the world over, let's travel the dimensions all over and tell us what on earth you've been doing, or what about this? What off the earth have you been doing as two purveyors of consciousness, people who bring huge downloads from many dimensions into today?
Well, we've been on a very interesting journey for the last year. I was very fortunate to be given the gift through consciousness of about 6 books, which form 2 trilogies. The first one being Thomas of Terror. And although it is fiction and it is a story and it's in the realms of fantasy, a lot of the lessons that come through in the realms are for actually people on Earth today. They are directly linked to Earth today, but at another place. And there's a lot of wisdom that comes through. And basically the books, the message through them is helping people of Earth or humans to become a new kind of custodian, because the new Earth that is emerging is certainly going to need a new kind of custodian. And that custodian needs to be trained and have a certain outlook that is really transcendent. So,
Before you go very far along, I want to ask you this, Jay Lee. Do you think that we're having huge downloads from the universes and from beyond that are coming in and penetrating human consciousness? Do you feel that that's what's going on right now?
From one perspective, I do feel that is the case. Another way, I feel that for us that are receiving that we made ourselves available to actually be of service to the Earth at this particular time.
So talk more about that. When you speak of downloads, where are they coming from? And are you saying that you're particularly aligned to receiving them? Is that what your explanation is?
Yes. You know, my own particular story, what happened when it was up on Table Mountain in Cape Town, when I got the first glimpse of this other reality and allowed myself to actually drift there in contemplation. Well, the surprise came when all the creatures and beings in this realm who are so filled with an incredible energy and knowledge came rushing towards me and literally putting their hands up going, I want to be known on Earth. I want to be known on Earth. Tell our story. And I started to write frantically because I needed to capture this. And the more I wrote, the more of them rushed forward to say, tell me on Earth. Let them know about us. So eventually I had to, like, you know, in these realms, put them back and say, hang on, I've got to spread you out over 6 books, because if I just write a book only about the creatures that are there, it doesn't make for fun storytelling. So unfortunately, I've got to bring a story in so that the reader will at least enjoy it, and I'll introduce each one of you as we go along, and you can give forth, you know, the knowledge that the Earth people actually need to hear.
Oh, what are the creatures? Are they different dimensional creatures? And do you have to be an intuitive to see them? Do you have to have sixth sense or 12th sense or whatever you call it?
Certainly, absolutely. You're not going to really know them from Earth, although there's a whole lot of Earth creatures there. the liminal realms where these are situated are actually in existence. And that's the crazy thing about it, especially for people that don't really understand how that works. They actually are in existence, but they're at another frequency. So they've been able to observe Earth, and they've been able to see where we've gone wrong and what we've done. And of course, they've kept their surroundings pretty pristine. And yeah, they have definitely the one thing that stands out the most is their equality in terms of the value that each single plant, leaf, tree, creature, insect has there. None is seen to be above the other. So this is one of the greatest messages that one of the greater messages they've actually brought forward.
Wow, that's very touching. And so would you say that that is a different, how could you explain it? Is it a different, you said liminal, is it a different dimension? Would you say it's like the fifth dimension or the seventh dimension, or is there such a parallel?
I would say it is a different dimension, yes. Whether we can call it fifth or seventh, I'm not sure that I can do that. That's not clear. However, you know, between physical worlds, there are the worlds of the thought forms, or the worlds of ideas and the imagination, where all dreams are birthed. So I would say that they come more from that dimension than any one that I can give a number to.
Well, what you know, this is really intriguing to me, because one of the things that I believe, that I think, I should say, I think I believe, I think I know, because I never really believe in, you know, forever. But if we talk about ETs, for example, they say they live in a different frequency, and they can be right around us, but we don't see them because they're in a different frequency. Is it kind of like that?
Exactly like that.
Okay. So we have many, many worlds in every moment, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when we open the right parts of our brain, mm-hmm. We can access these frequencies and these other realms quite easily, actually.
How did you open those parts of your brain? And then we'll bring in Paul and ask him as well.
Well, I certainly did my homework, and we've been taught intensely by a very special Tibetan Lama how to go into those places, how to let go of this world, let go of the conscious mind, and enter into a deeper and deeper and deeper unconscious state. So that, of course, opens up the bandwidth like a radio station, where you have access to a whole lot of frequencies, and all you learn to do is dial in. And I dialed into this one.
And that was when you were still in South Africa, or?
No, this is while I was living in Australia, but we were climbing Table Mountain in Cape Town in South Africa.
Aha. It's sort of very difficult for people to comprehend some of this, but it's also very hopeful, isn't it? Because one of the things a lot of us would really love to do is live in a world in which there's respect for all living beings without these huge hierarchical things based on money or power or greed or any of those things. Is this a reality that you believe that we can actually create here on the earth with some of these beings?
I would like to probably open up another part of this. There is one human being who is in these realms who has never been to Earth. And this human being has been there from the birth until today and will never ever come to Earth. He has not got the boundaries or the judgments or the limitations of a normal human being. So he's brought up by a grandmaster oak and a salamander and a whole lot of different sort of elven creatures. And they help him and train him to go through puberty, which they call the emergence, because there is a legacy that he has. And what's interesting, because I'm only completing the third trilogy now, is that in the teachings and what he has gone through to become this amazing human being without the boundaries and limitations of a normal human being, he's able to access his creative centers and to really go beyond the human understanding of imagination to create other realities. And through the books, he actually teaches us on Earth how to do this.
So So it's not fiction, is it? I mean, this is something that's very real in your experience, is it not?
This is very, very real in my experience, but also with the teachings we've had from the Tibetans, it's very real even here on Earth for everybody.
Hmm.
So this isn't just make-believe, no.
So
this is an earth-changer.
And how can more and more, so I gather what your trilogies, your two trilogies, are bringing to us is an awakening into how we can imbue ourselves with this kind of consciousness. Is that kind of what you're saying, and bring some sort of peace on earth?
Absolutely. It assists every reader to become more conscious, to become more sensitive, to help them understand that, you know, when human beings or when any creatures of any kind work together, you know, the planet will start to sing. It'll start to sing a new tune that it's never sung before. And that's how we can become the custodians of a really bright future.
Oh, I love the idea. Now, tell me about this human that's there on the liminal side being carefully, not coddled, you didn't say coddled, but carefully trained and so on by beings over there.
Well, his mother was from Earth, but she was taken there through a portal. And his father is off planet. They no longer exist. He's been left as a baby in the care of really out of the ordinary type of beings.
Is but, he a hybrid? Is he a mixture?
He will be a hybrid. Mm-hmm. But the fact that his lineage, his mother's lineage, is from Earth, he obviously has to, even though he's never even met another human, he still has to go through a series of emotions and lessons and teachings, because even down in his DNA is still remnants of, you know, the human being that is still very limited, has a lot of boundaries, a lot of doubt, isn't quite fully willing to step forward without a smidgen of doubt. So he does have to go and deal with those things first before his true heritage and his true divinity, we could say, does come forward inside of him, so that he can claim his position and his right as a human being. And really, he redefines what a human being is.
Wow. And how old is he?
Book basically starts off at him at about 11. We go through puberty, goes through an initiation, a very specially planned initiation by all the beings there. And he certainly befriends some mighty, mighty creatures.
What kind of creatures? When you say mighty creatures, what are they, like dinosaurs? Or are they flying creatures? A whole variety?
Some of the greater creatures are actually great big trees, but we have, you know, the Yetish, which are sort of like the abominable snowmen, but we would call them the dream stealers. Mm. So they would steal dreams from anyone who asked a favor from them, and they'd build these very special tapestries out of the dreams. There would be the Drays, and the Drays are made of crystal, and I would say they akin to dragons, but very, very different and have their own realm all to themselves.
Do they breathe fire?
They do, but what's interesting about them, they explain themselves all the way through. And, you know, when they blow blue smoke, it's because it's a sign that they're filled with joy, you know. Mm-hmm. When they breathe fire, it's more of a mental ability than a heartfelt ability. So they are very interesting. And probably one of the most important things, which I almost left out, this boy obviously needs to be clothed. So a very special barking spider and two leaf bugs actually live on his body, and they spin the web and use the leaves to clothe him. Hmm. So he is always clothed. And Cornelius the spider actually eventually becomes enlightened. So he lives on his shoulder and is a really wise sage. The leaf bugs themselves, we would call them Curly and Jick, mm-hmm. are absolutely, probably share one IQ between them. So the whole way through, really say the most ridiculous things and have a great sense of humor. So yeah, it brings in a lot of that. There's hobgoblins, there's, fair, there's all sorts.
Wow. Well, and you could actually see these, huh?
Yeah, and my brother's an artist, Will, so he's been able to take what's in my mind and put them to paper. So we've already started the initial drawings and sketches of all the creatures, and there's already interest in regarding movies and that. So there's definitely things developing from this.
Have you given any classes or let's talk a little bit before we talk further into the books. Let's talk about the work that you and Paul do with people in your groups and in your classes and so on, because you're both purveyors of consciousness in a huge way on yourselves, aren't you?
Well, probably for this one, I'm going to let Paul answer that one.
Okay, Veronica, thank you for the question. Yes, through our life journey, being involved with self-development and spiritual development for many, many years, traveling the world, we have been blessed and have ended up in a privileged position of having access to certain gifts, sensitivities, and knowledge from the masters we've worked with. And we realize that this time in our history and in our evolution, we are in an amazing place. We are in a liminal environment where we're letting go of the old paradigms, we're letting go of the old ways of thinking and relating and interacting and processing, experiencing life here on planet Earth. And we're moving and emerging into a whole new arena, a new frequency, a new level of understanding, and a new human is emerging with a different level of consciousness, a different way to connect, to communicate, and to synergize collectively together. And so a big part of our teaching when we're working with people is to help them to heal and disengage from the past, to change their vibration so that they can access their own inner gifts, to understand how to read what's taking place in the world, and to be able to be a participator in engaging in this new world, becoming a new human being.
So that means like we have to deal with our defenses and our attachment to our identity in the social strata. Is that what you're speaking about?
Yes, because we understand that we're changing from moment to moment to moment, and human beings like to become, they create a comfort zone in the way that they relate to themselves, the way that they relate to the world, and they quite often resist change. But change is happening and it is continuous, and the world is changing very rapidly. So it's important to be willing to be open to change, be willing to reassess, to question, to reevaluate what's going on internally in your internal worlds, and also how you relate to and how you allow the external world to impact upon you.
Well, how do you work with that? Do you use energy or what would you say?
It's through a whole process of teaching people to have a new level of understanding, teaching people to go into altered states so that they can detach. They can become more conscious to be able to observe the inner mechanisms and workings of their own consciousness and mind, and then becoming empowered to be able to upgrade that basically on their own momentum, and then they can re-emerge and explore the world and to make changes in their life.
How long does the process take? That's a silly question in a sense, but you already mentioned how fast things are changing on the planet. And I know that there are people just whipping through changes that used to take 10, 15, 20 years, right?
Yes, because what's happening as the frequency is changing, which is expressed in Jayali's books, the new consciousness that's coming through to planet Earth, what's happening is people can go much deeper and the changes can happen much faster. But the interesting thing is one needs to be willing to make a commitment to their spiritual development for life. So it's not something that you test the water and you play for a little while to see whether you like it or not. What's required now is if you resonate with your spirituality, you make a commitment that this is a path that you will follow for the rest of your life, and then you can start tapping the opportunities that it can offer you in the moment, in the now.
Sort of like entering a whole stream of beingness, is it?
Yes, and it's not necessarily that you have to eat a certain way or dress a certain way, it's a state of being.
Hmm. And so give us some of the advice about, like, what is a state of being? And also, are you getting the same source of information that Jay Lee is? Are you both downloading similar things, or do you have your own channels and, you know, enhance one another? Or how does it work as a couple, as a married couple?
We do have our own unique access to consciousness.
Okay.
And it'll come through in subtle ways that show a difference, but at the same time it tends to synergize and blend and become one. And so quite often, as we become aware of a download of consciousness, we'll bounce it off each other, look at it from our different perspectives, and that tend to actually synergize and enhance what's been downloaded. So it works very well together.
And how do people find you? How do people come in and are, okay, the thing about the commitment and the long-term commitment to being, how do people step into that? You see what I mean? Who's attracted? And I know Jay Lee said that the consciousness is coming through some people who then, kind of like electrodes, light the way for others. I think that's kind of the idea that I understood. Yeah. And so how do people come? What do they do? How do they know to commit?
Basically, people reach a point in their life where they start to question. And the question is this all there is to life?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps there's something more. It's an internal question. As they start to have these questions that there's got to be something more, and perhaps there is something that relates to spirituality that perhaps can give them answers and give them the understanding that they're looking for and wanting for behind what's unfolding in their life. When they start asking the right questions, their consciousness starts to shift, their frequency changes. As that takes place magnetically and energetically on a vibrational level, they will then start to attract opportunities, experiences, people, situations that will reflect what they're looking for. And basically, synchronistically, you start following those opportunities and signposts that turn up in your life.
But you don't actually say that they need to be adhering to your particular style, yours and Jay Lee's style. Are you just saying generally people start waking up in a certain way, but they don't have to be in one ashram, one temple?
Yes, that's correct, because that whole premise of the need to belong to one particular path is falling away. Belonging to a certain hierarchy is falling away. The new paradigm is that we're all on the same level playing field. Mm-hmm. We all have value, and we all have an opportunity to make a difference for those who cross our path. Mm-hmm. And people may cross your path temporarily, or they may synergize and resonate with you. As you evolve, they evolve, and you can evolve together. But there's no hierarchical structure that someone's better than somebody else. We actually learn and teach and heal each other as we evolve.
I guess a lot of us are learning that, but I have never been to a Tibetan Lama. I would love to learn about that. Can you share some of that with us?
This particular Lama, I was introduced to him through one of my first spiritual teachers, and he was involved with the mystery schools in Tibet. And funnily enough, the mystery schools in Tibet are a mystery. No one knows where they are, and no one knows how to get there except the lamas. And they have to use their higher faculties to find their way. So it depends on what level of consciousness you're in will determine whether you can find your way there or not. We were blessed. I was blessed to be initiated into working with him in the late 80s. And he didn't rely upon Tibetan traditions as such. He spoke very simply and plainly, but the simple concepts and the responses that he passed on connected very deep within you. It went right through you.
Vibrationally, you'd say, huh?
Vibrationally, and he didn't work with the public. He didn't advertise. You found him, or he found you, because of your vibration, according to your state of consciousness. So it was meetings basically done in private, and he would give us downloads as well, help us to understand how to upgrade our consciousness, to fine-tune our awareness, our ability to be present, to activate our senses, and to work with what's happening in our world. And to work with to have an opportunity to work with somebody who's a fully enlightened master in private, one-on-one sessions. It's just such a privilege that we've been blessed.
And are you still doing it, or was that a period of time?
Well, since the late 80s, we have been continually working with him. In 2010, he left the physical plane regarding he dropped his body, but he is still very active and still working with us and the people that he worked with closely. So we still are in communication and we still have interaction and downloads taking place.
So, wow. So the people who come to your gatherings also receive transmissions, do they not?
Yes, they do.
And we want them to come over this radio show, right?
Right. You know, it's interesting because I've noticed with myself that my body and my mind becomes like a tuning fork. Mm-hmm. So in the presence of certain people, my body will absolutely close or it'll absolutely open. And that obviously tells me one thing. But then my mind as well, certain questions sort of really open portals to extravagant answers and beautiful stuff that comes through. And some questions don't open those portals and just normal knowledge is given over.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? So it's like you're not just a tuning fork, you're also this kind of amazing vortex that receives. It just seems like you're pulsing away in the universes daily.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more and more you trust in the system and what's going on, the better it starts to work for you. So in the beginning, when my body used to close down and literally I couldn't say a word because a particular person had walked into the room, I would naturally in the beginning really doubt myself and go, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Why can't you even say a word? But it was over time that I learned to trust that something was afoot that I did not know of, and I was not allowed to bring through any of the heavenly, beautiful stuff in the presence of perhaps this one particular person. But if my body totally opened up, I felt like I could talk all day. It was another message. It's clear. Go ahead, Jaylee. Talk to your heart's content. Let it flow.
Wow, and let the people bask in your awakening fields, right?
Well, yes, just receive what they have a right to receive, really, that they're open to.
So there really isn't a danger also if you're opening and sharing this wondrous, there's so many wonderful vibrations that come through. If somebody's not ready for it, it just will just bounce off them, will it?
Or it just won't even come through, right?
Yeah, so you don't have to actually worry about it, right?
No, there should be no fear whatsoever. You know, we could talk to, and we've seen this so many times, where we can talk to a group of people, say one sentence, and every single person will hear it at the frequency where they are at.
Oh, how brilliant. I love that. Well, that's
right?
Really respectful when you think about it from a different perspective, isn't it? It's like everyone's respected for wherever they are at the time, right?
Truly, yes, sure. And, you know, to live in that state where you're fearless, that, you know, you're trusting that everyone's going to receive exactly what they need. If a person can only ingest a teaspoonful, that's all they will get. If a person can ingest a whole cupful, that's what they will receive.
Well, let's go back to Thomas.
Right.
Because it seems like he's the major character of the first book, is that right? Is there a different character all the way through?
No, he's the major character of all six books.
Okay. And he starts off as a young one?
A young boy, prepubescent. So it's quite a journey because he's been brought up with bears and wolves. So when he starts to get a little bit of hair on his arms and that, he literally actually thinks he's going to become a bear until Cornelius the spider informs him, no, you'll always be a human. You're not going to be a bear. But he has, in the beginning, he has no mirrors, no reflections, because he's never seen another human being. He's never seen an adult human being. So he has no idea what he is going to turn into.
Hmm. So it's pretty hard for him to be a locust. So tell us what kinds of things he turns into. Tell us the little bits of his adventure without giving away the big, you know, mystery parts.
Well, for him, I mean, a lot of the first book is him stumbling, trying to figure out who he is. And he, a lot of it as well is the nuggets start to come in where he things are revealed to him about his destiny, about his place, about what he needs to start focusing on. And the other part that I haven't brought in yet is all the way through the first trilogy is a force which I call the unknown, and which culminates in the end, at the end of the third trilogy. But the force is always seems to be, this unknown force stalks him, always wanting something from him, but because he hasn't gone through puberty, it can't claim him. So in the first trilogy, it's about all the creatures on different adventures, different tasks, different initiations and challenges, building him up to the point where he has to face this unknown force. And really, it would like to claim his creativity, the creativity of a human being, because a human being in their mind and through their imagination can create other realms. So it seeks this ability of his, and all his training and the challenges he goes through is to fortify him, get him ready, get him to the place where he can actually, straight after his puberty, stand and face this unknown force.
Wow, it's a little bit like a Star Wars thing, a lot more majestic, or not majestic, multidimensional is what I want to say.
Yes.
So yes, does he actually get his perceptions and his awarenesses from his own, like his own force, his own intuitive drive, or does he get it from the other critters and creatures that are around him?
Well, like the master oak tree obviously plays a large part, the spider plays a large part in teaching him, but a lot of the places they lead him is that he can come to the conclusions himself.
So, and is his hero, it's a heroic journey, isn't it? It's a heroic consciousness journey, is that right?
Yes, the heroic journey that really is written so that every reader comes out on the other side changed. Things are posed and things are questioned and things are shared in it which come from the mystery schools of Tibet. So it's not only for Thomas, it's for every single eyes that put sight in the book.
Well, Jaylee, have you run them by your children?
I have, in fact, run them by my children. I've also run them by other children. So the first children that ever read them weren't my own, and I've actually got them in the very front under my gratitude page.
Oh,
they were my very first critics.
Oh, wow. And did it have the – you know, it would be so – exciting, not exciting, heart-filling to have children awaken under these kinds of circumstances way younger, you know, wouldn't it?
It would, actually. And, you know, the books are written, and this is perhaps one of the things that I need to say, is the books are written for readers from the age of 10 to 100.
100,
this is not. It's not a children's story. It's for everybody. There's some pretty big revelations in it for adults alike.
Mm-hmm. And Veronica, if I could just add something to that.
Please, yes.
Is when you understand children, their consciousness is far more open, so it's easier for them to explore other realms and to absorb knowledge and information and to resonate because their consciousness is more pure.
Right.
But people who've been on the spiritual path, or they're awakening to the spiritual path, the more spiritual work that they've done, the more they see in the books, they can see the hidden mysteries that have been woven into the stories as the books unfold. And the books are also a metaphor for what's happening on planet Earth right now, where we need to question, who am I as a human being? We need to understand that we are dealing with an unknown challenge or force of the changes that are taking place. What direction are we moving in life? We need to become more sensitive to be able to be able to communicate with nature, and then listen and allow nature to communicate back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So the books are also reflecting what we need to do here on planet Earth to upgrade and to be able to take our life, our world, and this earth to a whole new experience.
Well, you know, one of the things that fascinates me, this will sound a bit like a sidebar, but I think you'll get my point, is in my interviews, there are several people, one in particular, who always talks about visions that he had that taught him that humans were like elephants that were tied up as little elephants, and they still take only a string to keep them bound to a fence, you know, that we are unlimitable. In a huge way, we just don't know it. And there are beings that are helping us realize how unlimitable we are, if that makes sense. Your work is about that.
Well, yes, and how that makes sense is one of the very first critics I had that read my book. They came away with one issue, and that issue was that this human seemed to have no limit.
Exactly.
And because to the normal human mind, a human being with no boundaries is dangerous and all-powerful and can go bad. However, in the Thomas trilogy, we are shown that with his pure mind and with his pure heart, he doesn't need those normal limitations. He can become powerful because it's never going to go destructive.
And can you guarantee that, Jaylee? I'm sort of teasing you here.
I can only guarantee that as far as the Tibetan master we worked with was such a spectacular person. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And just as also a sidebar there, Veronica, and for the listeners, the way that the Tibetan master passed on consciousness and knowledge, you had to be at the right frequency to receive it. And then you have to be at the right frequency to access it within you to be able to convey it. So in the same way, to reach the higher states of consciousness and to become a being of power, as Thomas does, you have to be in the right frequency with a pure heart and mind to reach that state, to have access to that knowledge and that power to be able to influence your world. If you're not in that right vibration, you won't have access to it. It's like a safety mechanism.
Well, it's very interesting because we spoke of boundaries, or you did, Jaylee, you speak of boundaries, and most boundaries come from our defenses, don't they? You know, and I'm going, because I'm trying to cogitate what it would be like for our hero, Thomas, to have that freedom and clarity. It's almost incomprehensible, but it seems so precious, doesn't it? To be able to just be, I really believe we're unlimitable. I really believe humans are. We just can't find the release valves most of the time, right?
Or drop the layers that stop us from actually accessing that level of our being.
Yeah, the attachments and the identities.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the main messages in the book is that it is that good. And human beings can be that good. And that kind of goodness does exist in the universe.
Do you travel in the six books? Do you actually move into different realms of the universe besides the liminal? I would assume the liminal is... Now, isn't that funny? I was assuming it was near Earth, but I guess it doesn't have to be, does it?
Well, it's accessible from and to Earth through portals. So you could say it's in the vicinity, yes.
I guess time and space are going to change entirely, are they not, in the book?
Yeah, and you know, for me to say too much now may spoil the second trilogy.
Well, I don't want you to spoil it, but hey, you're going to make it into a movie, is that right?
Well, there's certainly whispers in the pipeline, and I'm also having to do the synopsis for the game as well, for the online game. So it's heading in particular directions, yes.
But you know, it's really wonderful. I remember reading, I don't know if either of you read the I Am Discourses way back from the 30s and 20s, not that I'm quite that old, but in any case, they were talking about by the end of the 2000, you know, by the year 2000, there would be moving pictures, and those moving pictures would take people on kind of real life experiences that could help them become much greater than they could ever imagine, because I guess it's vicarious living, virtual reality stuff. And
well, I believe that.
I do too, but we seem to spend it in the wrong direction a lot of the time. But this, I think, I mean, you would feel like you could probably lift an awful lot of people to a much higher frequency, hey?
Yeah, and you know, the exposure and this coming about and being released on Earth, you know, everything is perfect timing. So even though we have a backlog of movies that perhaps to the casual eye don't seem so uplifting, perhaps they are helping humans to decide who they are. You know, even if it's a really bad story, while I'm watching, I'm making a decision whether that's me or not. And, you know, when I start to leave those movies and then watch ones that are more uplifting, I've made a decision about myself. So I think they do serve a purpose.
Well, I guess that's true, isn't it? It's funny because people nowadays talk all the time about choice. Everything is a choice. But a lot of times people have no idea what that means. Do you know what I mean? And so you're just giving us a very prime example of how you can see something and you can choose that that isn't your direction. You can make choices on that level as well.
Yeah, you know, subconsciously, you know, because we're both master hypnotherapists as well. If you're watching, for example, a zombie movie, yes, there's a story there and has all the props, but deep down at a subconscious level, you're deciding whether you're a zombie-like person who really doesn't want to engage, doesn't want to learn, doesn't want to do anything, and you give up your right to be anything on earth, or whether you don't want to be that. At some level, you're making decisions about yourself.
Yes, you are. You're making choices, actually, but we don't think of them as choices,
absolutely,
right? Isn't that interesting?
You know, yep.
So you're saying it could be a good thing to push away from, is a zombie movie can teach us what we could be like, so we're not going to do that.
Right, you know, it's you're sitting there, and even if you have one emotion that says, well, I wouldn't like that, I wouldn't like to be that, that one emotion is enough to catapult your spirit in a whole other direction.
Mm-hmm. That's true, isn't it? Now, I want to jump back to your brother who would be the illustrator. Did I misunderstand you, or was I lucky enough to understand that he also had the ability to, that you have, to see in your mind the pictures that you have there, or did you have to express them to him so he could paint them or draw them?
No, it's fortunate. I mean, we've been really close most of our lives, and I was able to hand over all three books to him, and the minute he read them, he could see them. And I can see them in my mind's eye, but I'm not gifted with sketching or drawing or actually bringing them into on paper. I can't do that. But he was able to capture them exactly the way I'd written about them, see what I'd seen, and he could sketch them. And, you know, when he started to sketch them and I was watching him, I lit up like a Christmas tree, because for me, it was the very first time I was seeing them on Earth.
Wow.
He grounded them here. He brought them visually here and grounded them. And he's busy at the moment doing all sorts of sketches and ones with color. And, you know, just the cover of the book is the eye of an emerald dray. And it's quite beautiful. So
I think I was sent that picture. That's beautiful.
You were.
Yeah,
you were.
I wasn't sure what it was. I meant to ask you, but I had Skype problems, or I would have gone back to find it.
Right.
Perhaps you could resend it, and I will put it up with our little flyer all about you. That'd be great.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, Reign of Giants, which is the second book, he's done the cover as well for that. And I wrote a year ago a song called The Song of Thomas. And my brother is also a very good musician. So he was able to put music to my song. And obviously I would write it ignorantly in the form of a poem. So he's taken my poem and adapted it, changed it, and made it into the Song of Thomas. So once we get the right voice in that, we'll obviously have a bit of fun with that one as well.
Oh, isn't that exciting? And you'd be able to put it out separately, possibly, and have an impact in more than one direction.
Absolutely. So we're here to play, right?
Yeah. One of the things that several of us have been talking about, because I know a lot of people in the spiritual mode, and we're saying it's very unfortunate that we deal with competition or fear of who we are with one another, that sort of thing. It's kind of an intrinsic disquiet or discomfort amongst people. So when you were speaking about your brother and the pictures and so on, I thought, isn't it ideal when the collective, and in this case it's two people, or perhaps Paul too, but the collective is mutually recognizes one another's gifts and brilliance and perceptions, rather than have a kind of a boundary-filled competitiveness or something. We've been talking lately about how ideal that would be.
You know, I'm going to tell you a really strange thing.
I like strange.
I was doing yoga the one day, and I was lying in Shavasana pose. I was resting, and I suddenly I felt like I had the weight of the world on me. Like I had so many things that I had to uphold, and I had to be everything to everyone. And this voice in my head says to me, "You are a gnat on the butt of an elephant." That sounds crazy. But in that moment, the realization of how absolutely insignificant I was, and that my role was so small, it freed me from a burden that was crippling me. From there, what actually started to happen is this huge acknowledgement of the people around me that each one of us has a beautiful, unique little role that we can 100% fulfill ourselves. But the minute we try to fill every role and be everything to everyone is where we start to lose the plot and actually start to burden ourselves. So it has been a wonderful joy for me, for the people surrounding me, to discover the nuggets they have that I don't have to be, I don't have to carry, because I can trust they will 100% fulfill that part that I don't have to be.
I love that. And that is such a wonderful gift to give everybody around you, actually, isn't it? I mean, it makes life a lot more pleasant, or not just pleasant. I guess
valuable.
And I also think if we are an unlimitable species, that's the way to bring the collective into this amazing, blooming, unlimitable group or gang or oneness, I suppose, eh?
Yep. No, fully in agreement with that.
So when are the books coming out?
Well, Tomes of Terror is now available on Amazon, and you can definitely get an ebook on hardcover. You can get it softcover. So it's full steam ahead. I have a few reins on me at the moment regarding the others, just until we get Thomas out there. And it's all about timing, right?
You betcha.
And so the others are all finished, ready to fly, and one at a time they'll be appearing.
How's it been to bring through 6 books? That's a lot.
Yeah, as 2 trilogies, I mean, it was interesting. There were places where I had no idea where the realms were taking me, and I had to disappear for a week with Paul into the rainforest to get away from the stress and the normal house. And the minute I was away in the rainforest, you know, the rest of it would suddenly download through my consciousness. And even I didn't even know the last 2 chapters of the first trilogy until the last 2 chapters.
Oh, wow. You went and took your laptop into the rainforest with you, did you?
Absolutely, I did. And the extraordinary part of this journey for me personally is when the teachings would come through, when Thomas was being taught the words of wisdom from the mystery schools, I would type, not even knowing what I'm typing. And at the end of the discourse, I would go back to read it, and I would be reading it for the first time, being taught myself for the first time.
Wonderful. Oh, is that ever wonderful. Well, we're going to have to end this very shortly. And I was just thinking maybe the two of you could leave our listening audience with a kind of a meditation. Our discussion was probably a meditation for them too. You have wonderful frequencies, both of you. But perhaps you have a little, just a little gift of a meditation or an affirmation or something.
Thank you, Veronica.
What I would suggest, what's important for people at this point, is to be able to really tune in and sense and feel with the heart and follow the heart. That's more important. We tend to overthink things and we try to work things out with our everyday intellectual mind. And when we do that, we end up becoming out of alignment with ourselves. So really tuning into your frequency, your feelings, connecting with your heart, and if it feels right there, that's the path to follow. If you follow your heart, synchronicity will fall into place and things will pop up that will guide you where you need to be at the right time. So it's more about trusting yourself, believing in yourself, and as Jelly was suggesting, being yourself. Don't try and be something you're not. Be yourself and follow that path and things will fall into place more elegantly.
I love that. So instead of intellectual, it's heart-electual.
Exactly. And that actually, some of the new discoveries is that there's actually cells in the heart that are brain cells.
Yeah, I love that. That's wonderful, isn't it?
And the heart has reasons which reason doesn't understand.
Isn't that great? Thank you for that. That's a wonderful piece to just chew on and enjoy.
Yeah.
Now tell people how to get hold of you. And I think that you've already said Thomas of Tara. Is that it? T-A-R-R-A? Is that right? At Amazon?
T-E-R-R-A.
T-E-R-R-A. Of Earth, actually.
Yeah.
And so tell people how to get hold of you if they want more information or they want to be coming to maybe your discussions or your seminars or where are you going to be?
Okay, our exact website, I will send you the link if you don't mind. But on Facebook, we have a Thomas of Terra Mysteries. So we're always showing things in there. There's T-shirts and everything that we're having made at the moment.
Wonderful.
And the website is within the next 24 hours going live.
Great. Well, it has been a wonderful treat to have you on as Paradigm Shifters. And actually, I think that your work is, it's a huge paradigm shifter. It's huge. It's wonderful. Thank you.
And maybe we can do this again.
I'd love that. When are you going back to Down Under? Of course, we can talk Down Under and Up Over and all the rest of it. You could call us from the liminal. That'd be great.
Yeah. That'll be a great idea. Yeah. So early November, we'll be back in Australia.
Oh, you will, eh?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Let's keep each other posted. We would love to hear from you again.
Yeah, and I'd like to come play in your wonderful little world as well.
Oh, I've left Bellingham. I'm living in L.A.
Yeah, I'm talking about the radio.
Oh, the radio, yes. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Please do that. I'd love that, especially as your books come out.
So you're living in Los Angeles.
Yes, and I'm loving it. Can you believe that?
Oh, we're on our way to San Francisco.
Yeah, well, you're too far away from me, but it would be nice to hook up, to say hello and have a hug and feel your frequencies close up. But
we definitely look forward to that and we'll make it happen.
Wonderful. So keep in touch and thank you so much for being Paradigm
Wonderful
Shifters.
Wonderful to hear from you, Veronica.
And you too. And I'm glad you've got your sixth level book out there.
Thanks, honey.
All right. Goodbye, both of you.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.